entire podcast this week. It's a case of wry glances to camera all round us. Martin Freeman, Tim from The Office, Bilbo from The Office, A-Bag and Workplace, and Everett K. Ross from The Office, A Wakandan Workplace, Pops by Jatorka's new horror movie, Cargo, all that and the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that is so jet-lagged it's asked Siri to step in and host. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the Empire Podcast.
All right, that's enough of that. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the Empire Podcast. Thank you, Siri, for that cameo. Brought to you by those wonderful pizza, Sky Cinema, the dedicated home for movie lovers. Later in the show, I will be pointing out a couple of movies you can watch on Sky Cinema. Just two movies from the 1,000-plus films that are available on demand on Sky Cinema, including a brand new premiere every single day. How exciting! It's exciting. I'm excited! Woo. Jet lag! Woo-hey! I've barely slept this week.
Yeah.
Barely slept, which is why I asked Siri to step in for me. And you know what? I'm going to ask Siri to step in once again for the introductions, because this week I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Aren't I, Siri? Tell us about them.
The 31st of May 2018, 1548. Plot to have Helen murdered.
What? No,
she likes
what?
The Winchester boys, especially with their shirts off, A, while safe war FNAR. And
what?
Then there's Nick the Semyon. Am I saying that right, Nick?
Yes, Siri.
Wow.
Siri's the first person to say it right. I, for one, hail our new robot. Hang on, can I pause this horror show?
Yeah.
Siri is a man?
On my phone, yeah.
Siri, are you a man?
No.
It'd be his voice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
I'm just going to turn on for you.
Hey, Siri, are you a man?
I am Siri.
Oh, what? This is a last-minute twist, straight out of, you know, Desperate Housewives.
Wow.
For one thing.
Oh, my God. You mean straight out of Designated Survivor, I think you'll find, Nick.
I think it's more like a twist out of Desperate Housewives, Chris.
No, it's more like a twist, surely, out of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. We're talking about the great TV shows that are occupying us at the moment. Nick is deeply, deeply into Desperate Housewives.
It's hard to say why.
I don't know why.
I'm only one episode in, but it's got me by the jaffers. I'm also watching Moonlighting.
Doing your day job, or...?
You're an idiot. I just don't know why. I thought I'd watch a bit of pre-Die Hard Bruce. They're going to fall for each other.
Are they?
What?
According to the artwork for season three.
According to every article ever written about 80s TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's good. I recommend it.
And the trope, the moonlighting problem.
It's,
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
The moonlighting problem is there's too much of it. And I'm a bit bored.
Hells Bells, you're watching Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
I watched.
Season four?
I've literally watched it all last night.
This is the last season, isn't it? Or is there one more to
this
come?
This is only the first half of the season, so there's more.
All right.
Thank goodness. I've missed it. It's good.
What's it about? What's happening?
Kimmy is working for an internet startup because they thought she was probably the only person who can talk to people who work there. But while she can talk to people, she still doesn't understand people, so she's still a terrible, terrible choice for that job.
Okay.
There's a great Tom Hanks Nazi joke in there, which is just worth watching the season for on its own.
Sold.
Yeah, it's fun.
Sold. It's a show I kind of stopped watching a little
Me
bit,
too.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I need to get back into it.
It actually is one of those ones that benefits hugely from repeat viewings. Like, I've picked up on so many more jokes when I've just, like, wanted something 20 minutes long to watch before bed or something and gone back and watched an episode. There's a robot that crops up, like, the whole way through for the last couple of seasons.
Cool.
Every episode, somewhere, there's a robot.
really?
Yeah, and I didn't even notice that the first watch through. And there's a lot of very quick little asides that are just wonderful.
Such I enjoyed Martin Short's character very much.
Oh, he's always great. And his special with Steve Martin, which I know we both watched
last
week.
I watched it twice on the weekend.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's so funny. Two words, human bagpipes. Martin Short is awesome.
He's 68 years old.
And as I've learned this year, there is no bad GIF featuring Martin Short. If you go to some kind of GIF generator, GIF generator.
It's a GIF
that keeps
GIF
on
generator,
giving. Martin Short is the GIF that keeps on giving, and there are amazing Martin Short GIFs.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's extraordinary. So this is what's it called? It's called.
Why is it not called
The Two Martins? It should have been called The Two Martins.
It's called something better. I think it's called something along the lines of An Evening You Will Forget for the Rest of Your Lives.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
That's correct.
Yeah, I had forgotten.
And it's only an hour long, and it made me laugh a great deal.
A lot.
So Steve Martin and Martin Short kind of doing their thing, a little bit of like a little bit of banter, but mm-hmm. not Mike Reed, Chevy Chase, car crash banter, actual...
No good banter.
Proper rehearsed banter. You know, they don't take each other by surprise with their anecdotes.
There's a couple of surprises, I think, in there. There's one bit where Steve Martin cracks up at something Martin Short says.
Martin Sheen's in it as well.
Wow. They both say a very rude word, which is awesome. But yeah, as Martin Short
Mother
says...
Flipper.
As Martin Short says in it, hanging out with Steve Martin is like deliverance. It's all fun and games till the banjos come out.
It's true, because it showcases their versatility. If you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix and it's great. So they have a bit of stagecraft, bit of jokes together on stage. Then Steve Martin will leave the stage and let Martin Short take over. And Martin Short is just this born wonderful ham of a guy. And you're watching him doing this and you're thinking, why isn't his movie career better? You know, why hasn't he made more classic films? He starts off with Three Amigos and it's pretty much downhill from there.
Off the back of watching this, I have rented Captain Ron. I have not yet watched it, but I'm saving it for the weekend. I did a search for Martin Short films on iTunes and that was the least objectionable looking.
Oh, I don't know.
There's one where he plays like an 11-year-old boy. Have you seen that one?
That's a bit wrong. I love him in Father of the Bride. I love both of them in Father of the Bride, but he is, as Fronk, he is quite astonishing. Yeah. That accent has never been matched.
Or deciphered.
Yeah.
By anybody. Yeah. Siri would have his or her work cut out with that accent.
He's the best bit of Inherent Vice, I would say.
Yes, he is. He's great in that.
The thing about Martin Short, he's pretty much the best bit of almost everything he's in. My wife didn't really know a lot. Oh, here we go, drinking game. My wife didn't really know a lot about him when we were watching the show. And I went, you haven't seen him in Arrested Development? Or do you remember him from Arrested Development? And so I found on YouTube like a 3-minute compilation of his character, Uncle Jack from Arrested Development. And just that 3 minutes alone is so three of the funniest videos you'll see all year.
The plastic surgeon in Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Seeing as this is turning into the Martin Short podcast, I'm going to do a quick plug for his amazing book, My Life as a Humble Comedy Legend. And I swear that book has the funniest quotes from other comedians like recommending it. You know, when you have a little quote from people recommending the book on the dust jacket, there are some genius ones from like Steve Martin and all kinds of people. It's a very good book.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah. You met him, didn't you?
We did.
When you still reunited the Three Amigos.
I still think that is the best thing I've got to do for Empire.
It is the best thing you've got to do.
Sitting around a table with... If Mike Reed had been there, it would have been even better. But sitting around the table with the Three Amigos and John Landis.
And the Invisible Swordsman was there.
Invisible Swordsman was there, yep. Chevy Chase was wearing no trousers.
Singing Bush?
During that interview. Well, I didn't look that closely.
I set him up and Nick fumbles them over.
I'm the Martin Short of this podcast.
Yeah, really, really good. I have long said you should have quit after that. I've long been urging you to have.
You have been, actually. You had a petition and everything.
That is true. Yeah.
I did,
I was surprised how many signatures you got.
35 signatures.
When you actually went to your boss with the suggestion as well, that was really, it showed his commitment.
I think you should force quit, Nick, is what I said.
I take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Anywho, that's not the question. The question was, we do have a question this week. And hello, I'm back in charge of the podcast and it's as focused as ever. How was it last week, Helen? I'll confess I didn't listen to it. Did you corral everyone okay?
I mean, it was amazing. I mean, you know, just the compliments have flooded in. People saying it made them cry, it made them laugh. Uh-huh. One person fell down dead, actually, listening to it.
Really?
Yeah. Won a couple of awards. You know, it was fine.
Nick has a fun story, don't you, Nick?
Do I?
Yeah, you do.
For the answering this question?
No, about last week's podcast, about having heard it in an interesting setting.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. I was in Brighton at the weekend.
I think I built this up too much. This story will change your life, okay? This story will change your life. Nick, please, no pressure.
Do we have a drum roll sound effect?
We don't have a drum roll sound effect.
I was in Brighton at the weekend.
Good start.
The sun was out. It was a glorious day.
Were your guns out?
They were not out. I was sitting in a garden of the house of my friend.
Singing
when I heard Helen's voice. And I was like, what? Why is Helen here? But it wasn't Helen there. It was Helen coming out of somebody's speaker.
No!
In the house next to my friends.
That's terrifying.
They were listening to the Empire podcast, I should clarify. They haven't like secretly taped you. But it was cool.
Did you get a sense they were enjoying it? Or was it like, what's this nonsense?
Where is Chris?
It seemed to go down quite well.
Yeah?
There was no applause.
This is better than Chris. This is better than that time that idiot hosts, the one who rambles on for ages.
But it was nice. It was my first time hearing the podcast out in the wild.
Mm. That's cool.
It
that's
sounded
cool.
good.
On the tube, I will often go up to people if they're listening to something on their headphones and just lift the headphones off and just check what are you listening to?
Where's the handle?
I met two people at Warner Brothers when I was there for a screening during the week who were podcast listeners. Hello to you. I've forgotten your name.
Warner and Warner.
Yeah, Helen doesn't remember the little people. She has no time.
As you elbowed them out of the way.
They weren't little. They were well over 6 feet tall.
Oh,
so
harsh.
You know.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, good job last week, Helen.
Thank you.
I am on iTunes at the moment, and Helen Sucks 64 says awful, spelled OFFAL. Helen Sucks, SUX, get the Irish guy back, ASAPP, two Ps. Also, hashtag force quit Nick. Now, I don't know who posted that.
We'd have to decipher some of that. We can probably check, actually. Let me have a look. It seems to be coming from Christopher.
We don't have time, Helen. We have a time for this week's question, which comes from Twitter, and it is at acedavies23, and he asks, given Chris's near miss with Scott Adkins and the recent Where's the Handle mauling of Peter Dinklage, which celebrity are you most worried about interviewing given previous comments / jokes / impressions / unfavourable reviews?
Well, yours has to be Peter Dinklage, right? Because he is surely out for blood. he's got the axe and the handle, and he's heading your way.
Yeah. I'd be slightly worried about Peter Dinklage, yeah. Not because I don't think for a second that Peter Dinklage is aware of this podcast or that we've been ripping the piss out of him for the last 3 weeks, vis-a-vis Avengers Infinity War.
Sure.
Not the rest of his body of work.
No.
Fantastic
Pixels
body of work.
Pixels is very strong.
Love
Pixels
the Station
are strong.
Agent. Which
Stage
is
and Agent,
yeah.
Great in Elf. Mm-hmm. We've established this. He's also in Game of Thrones. But I am worried that, you know, people might have, the people listening to this will have heard that, and then they'll be like...
You think it'll get to him on the, like, somebody on the Game of Thrones set?
Possibly.
Podrick or
possibly.
One of the lesser wildlings will have heard it, and they'll pass it on down the line.
Yeah.
And he'll hear about it.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly.
He's
yeah.
only,
Ravens
they're
fly
only
really
in,
fast.
They're only in Ireland, and it's not that far away.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried about that. I'm also slightly worried about, because quite frankly, I'm enough of a hypocrite that I would interview him and just go, hi, you were brilliant in Avengers Infinity War, and just tell us about that, and not mention the fact that I thought he was terrible.
Can I say for the record, I really like him in Infinity War.
I don't hate him at all.
I'm going to balance this out. I'm bringing balance to the franchise.
Don't forget to check your rearview mirror when you're reversing, Nick.
My position on this has been very consistent.
Yeah, mine too, actually.
I enjoy all of the axe-based interplay in that film.
I do object to the use of the word Stormbreaker because I was on set of that film and met some people who were not very nice. So, you know. But apart from that...
Sorry, say again?
I was on set of Stormbreaker.
Oh, I thought you meant you were on set of Infinity War and you met people who had worked with Stormbreaker.
No.
And they weren't very nice.
No. And I'm sure they're lovely. I mean, all the props people and such who made Stormbreaker. And obviously Chris Hemsworth is lovely. We've met him, so...
Okay.
I mean, it does happen occasionally because we do interviews and we write reviews. And I think when you do that, there's always going to be a few kind of moments where you're thinking, I really hope this person hasn't. So, for instance, I reviewed All the Money in the World, which I really enjoyed, apart from Mark Wahlberg's performance, which I didn't think was quite as good as the rest of it. And I said so in my review, especially about him putting glasses on whenever he says exposition. And then I interviewed Mark Wahlberg not shortly afterwards, pretty soon afterwards. And he clearly hadn't read my review. Of course he hadn't. But
of course not.
Part of me worried I was going to get a kind of a Wahlberging.
So I try and be a little bit more responsible now, which is why for the last 3 weeks I've been hazing Peter Dinklage relentlessly for his performance in Avengers Infinity War. And the weird thing is, Helen, you say that you like him in that role as well, but I don't think you do. I have tape here from a podcast a couple of weeks ago. Let's see if we can remember this, Helen.
I, Helen O'Hara, declare that I think Peter Dinklage is terrible in Infinity War.
I don't remember
that. Do you remember that?
I mean,
no.
That does sound exactly like you.
Does it? Gosh.
Yes.
I guess it's one of those things where your own voice in your head sounds different to the way it does when recorded.
I mean,
the
evidence is incontrovertible.
You probably think you sound like this, Helen.
I, Helen O'Hara, what declare that I think Peter Dinklage is terrible in Infinity War.
It's O'Siri.
Is that a Friday? Have you got a Friday on your iPhone? That's amazing.
All right, so I was fiddling around with with my phone today because I thought, oh, I genuinely am really jet lagged and I'm not sure that I'll be able to like get through the whole podcast. So it would be quite fun to have Siri do the podcast for me. And I was looking into ways to do that. And I've discovered that there's a load of voices on here, on your iPhone for Siri. There is Australian Siri, there's English Siri, there's all sorts of Siris. The voice that you heard at the beginning is called Daniel. That's Daniel. Then there's Siri female. There's Serena, Oliver. There's Australians. There's Moira from Ireland.
Abigara.
Tessa from South Africa. Loads of Americans. That's a lot of fun. So that was Moira you heard there.
I thought it was. Yeah, it was.
Anyway, so yeah, have you annoyed anyone?
I don't think I have. I tend not to be terribly personal in my reviews. I certainly try not to be personal because I reckon a bad film is usually not one person's fault. Sometimes it is if it's a sort of auteur, and I've probably gone a bit for the director at that point, but they've all got egos big enough to take it, even if they read it, so it's fine. Yeah, no, I don't think I have. I do remember I had to do video interviews for Anonymous, which regular listeners will know I hate with a burning passion. I don't think I'd reviewed it. I don't think I'd written the review. So nobody knew I hated it with a burning passion. And I was able to go into those interviews and honestly, in the small talk beforehand, say that I liked people's performances. I had no problems with their performance. I just had a problem with everything they wanted to say. So there was an awkward section of zero small talk with Roland Emmerich because I had nothing nice to say to him about the film.
Last,
I could think of. But, you know, I tried my best not to actually be dishonest.
Last year, a few of us went to watch a preview of quite a big movie that wasn't very good. And we got ushered straight out of the screening to meet the director. And I'm not going to name the name, but that was super awkward because we're all looking at each other going, oh, we don't want to say anything too nice because you don't want to like give the, you know, the make them think that you're going to like give it a good review because we weren't going to.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't just stand there and not say anything. Yeah. So I think I said something along the lines of that looked like hard work to make. I'd like to think I said it more sensitively than that, but I don't think I did.
That was hard to watch. I imagine it was harder.
I think I said that must have taken a really long time. I bet you're glad you're finished. It was super awkward.
But it's that old thing, isn't it? You gotta be professional about these things, and desperately, desperately hope that they're not listening to the podcast. Yeah. Obviously, I want as many people as possible to listen to the podcast. The Scott Adkins thing, and Scott, if you're listening, hello again, and thank you for not killing me. The Scott Adkins thing was really surprising because back in the early days of the podcast, particularly, I think we all thought no one was listening and we could speak with impunity. And whatever we said would never get back to whoever we were. We don't bad mouth people on the Empire podcast. Every day is Christmas Eve, but now and again, we may something that's less than generous. Shall we say that?
Sometimes on Christmas Eve, you see a package that you're pretty sure is socks.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
and that may not thrill you.
Or just a poo in a box. You can tell because the box is a box. So you can't tell, but when you shake it, there's a kind of a lumping sound coming from within, and quite frankly, the smell has permeated the packaging. Yeah. So you can tell. So the fact that Scott Adkins listened to the podcast and called me out on Twitter was a bit of a shock, and I've been on my best behaviour ever since. Apart from, of course, the last 3 weeks where I've been relentlessly hazing Peter Dinklage. If Peter Dinklage comes on the podcast, how do you think I should handle it? Oh no! Handle! No,
Chris,
I'm not going to. Don't do it. I'm not.
Are you?
No.
You have control?
Yes.
You're an adult person.
I genuinely believe Chris is not going to yell it.
He's not going to do it. He's a bigger man.
I'm an adult person. I am in control of my actions. My actions do not control me. Helen, you were saying. Helen.
I feel like I'm on the world's worst roller coaster.
Hi.
It's totally fine.
Everything's fine, Chris.
Everything's fine. Please continue.
I would be honest that something about that line struck you as funny, and it became a little bit of a catchphrase of yours for a while.
Okay.
I would blame exhaustion.
I would learn to handle jet lag, personally.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do you handle jet lag?
I'm quite disciplined with when I sleep on the plane and stuff, depending on which way I'm going. So you don't sleep on when you're flying west, and you do try to sleep when you're flying east.
Mm-hmm.
Stay up until, you know, nighttime, and on the day that you get there, try to get out in the fresh air and do some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of it.
Good advice, Helen.
Thanks.
Very, very good advice indeed.
Oh, God.
If you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, contact us on Twitter at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast or we won't see it.
Or you can Facebook us, we're Empire Magazine, and you can email us as well, podcast at EmpireOnline, EmpireOnline.com.
This is a hate crime.
As Moira might say. Should we have some movie news? Let's talk about some movie news. Mm-hmm. What has been happening in the world of movie news?
Should we start with the big one? Big, big, big story.
Which is the big, big one?
James Marsden headlining the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
We have different definitions of big.
I think you misheard me. Sonic the Hedgehog movie. James Marsden.
I do enjoy James Marsden. He is a dependable comic presence. I assume this is a comic movie. Is that correct? It is about a blue hedgehog.
It is an animated movie. No, a combination of live action and CGI.
Right.
That doesn't bode well.
It doesn't generally bode well.
I mean,
Paddington worked out quite well, though, so maybe...
I would like to see an actor attempting to do a live-action Dr. Robotnik. Who could do that? That's poor Giamatti, surely, isn't it?
Oh, I know.
Look at your hedgehog. Oh, I want those rings. Is this a good idea?
No, it's a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea.
Every Day's Christmas Eve. We do not badmouth anything on the Empire podcast.
I apologise.
Lest Sonic the Hedgehog gets interviewed on the podcast and gets head up.
Look, it's a terrible idea, but so was the Lego movie, and that worked out really well. So
you're saying this is going to be great. I've got that on the record.
I don't think I guaranteed anything, but certainly, you know, it's there in the wrapping paper under the Christmas tree.
Mm. So, there were rumours earlier in the week that Paul Rudd was going to be playing this role, but no, James Marsden has swooped in and grabbed it off him.
Maybe there's singing. We haven't done a lot of Paul Rudd singing films.
Okay.
So. Maybe it's a musical.
Sonic musical.
Yeah.
Amazing. Probably not.
I somehow suspect that Paul Rudd is not at home kicking the cat about this. He would never kick the cat.
Of course he wouldn't.
Can we just say that? Absolutely clear. Paul
Unless,
Rudd would never do that.
Maybe cat kicking is what has kept him young. And indeed, aging backwards. How do we know? That's not his secret.
Wow, this is a bold direction, Helen.
The Empire podcast does not endorse cat kicking unless it is proven to make you young.
Even then. Don't think I can be any clearer on this, really. We do not condone the act of cat kicking.
I didn't say we condone it. I'm just asking the question.
But if Paul Rudd's doing it.
If Paul Rudd's doing it, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Kick away.
So Top Gun 2.
Top Gun 2 is happening.
Oh, are we done talking about Sonic the Hedgehog?
Okay. I think so. Do you want to add anything?
No, I have nothing to add.
So Top Gun 2. It started shooting today. Tom Cruise is heading into the danger zone with a brief pause at the catering table. Are we excited about Top Gun 2?
Yes. Well-ish. Well, I rewatched Top Gun recently and was reminded how great at being Top Gun it is.
It's pretty good. It's arguably the best.
It is as a film that is Top Gun, it is super good. And I do think it caught a moment and it caught a tone that I think very few other films have done in a way that I really enjoyed. And he's great as Maverick, although I think I'm going to miss Goose quite a lot. R.I.P. Goose.
Spoiler?
Oh, dude.
Spoiler.
Anyway, but we still don't know very much about it, do we? We don't know, like, who else is in it. There's, you know, do we? Maybe we do, and I just haven't
paid attention. No, they have kept this thing under wraps. In fact, this wasn't even listed on the IMDb. I was checking just the other day. I can't remember why. I like to check up on what Tom Cruise is doing at any given moment. And in his upcoming projects thingy on the IMDb, there was actually nothing. And I was a bit surprised because, especially for the last few years, he's been incredibly prolific. And he has just rolled from film into film into film. And he didn't seem to have anything on his dance card. And suddenly, out of the blue, we knew this was going to happen, but we've all been taken a little bit by surprise just by how quickly it has happened. Mm. Top Gun Maverick is what it appears to be called. Mm. And at the moment, literally the cast list on the IMDb is Tom Cruise, Maverick.
It could be a one-man show.
It could be.
But Val Kilmer has been, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but he has been petitioning hard to come back via Twitter. And he tweeted, I think it was last year, saying, I just got offered Top Gun 2. Not often you get to say yes without reading the script. Mm. And then shortly after that, he retracted it, saying, I jumped the Top Gun.
Oh.
Then after that, he tweeted a photo of himself wearing an Iceman t-shirt with the words, still got it, just saying. So he, Val Kilmer really wants to be in this film.
That's a roller coaster ride, Val.
Wow.
So put him in the film.
Yeah, I think they should. I wonder if are we going to presumably have a new...
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Comes blundering in like the T-Rex.
Oh, no. We've been joined by someone else who decided that they would just gate-crash the podcast halfway through. Let's give you a formal introduction in the style of the podcast.
And James Dyer is also here, which is nice, I guess.
So there we go. James Dyer is here. That's nice.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for joining us, Jimbo. We talked about Sonic the Hedgehog. Do you have anything to say about Sonic the Hedgehog?
I love Knuckles.
Is that a character?
Yes.
Or is this a sex life thing?
He's an echidna.
Again, I need some context here. Is this a character or a sex life thing?
It's a character. He's a little red echidna called Knuckles.
So the fox's tails.
The fox's tails, and he has two tails. And he was introduced in Sonic 2, and I believe Knuckles was introduced in, Sonic and Knuckles.
Okay. All right, so what else we talked about? We talked about what TV shows we're watching at the moment. I didn't mention Designated Survivor, which I have been binging all week, and it is unbelievable bollocks, but incredibly entertaining. Kiefer Sutherland in the White House as the president because the entire Congress is blown up and he is the designated survivor, so he becomes president, and
Ryan did it years ago.
He did, but not in the films, so Kiefer has swooped in and taken it. And I will say that this has really replaced Scandal, because Scandal has finished now, and this has replaced the Scandal-shaped hole in my life, because Scandal was a White House-set drama that was completely bollocks and went through what other shows would take an entire season to do in one episode, and Designated Survivor does that, and it is glorious. And I'm 12 episodes in, and I think they're done. I really do. I think they're finished, but it's going to carry on.
It's good, because you can tell he's not Jack Bauer, because he's wearing glasses.
Absolutely. Yeah. You learn that from Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
He does say damn it about 3 times an episode, but in a very, very soft way, almost remorseful, not damn it, more of a damn it, like that. So what are you watching?
Not so much watching, it's just very excited that Amazon have stepped in to save The Expanse, which had been cancelled by Sci-Fi.
But
this is very exciting news.
Guillermo del Toro must be excited about this as well.
He
tweeted
no
it's his favourite show.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, really good. And so season 4 of that will go ahead, and it will be on Amazon. So, you know, rock on.
Fantastic. All right, so that's good. And we were also chatting. The question this week was, how is there anyone that you're scared of interviewing, given previous jokes about them, impressions of them, things you may have said about them, bad reviews, or just generally you don't like the way they look?
Stan Lee.
I cannot stress enough how irresponsible that is, how disappointed in you I am. And let's just leave it at that.
You know what? He's probably a lovely man, and I'd probably get on very well with him, but I hate his cameos so much, and I've been so vocal in my hatred of his cameos. My favourite Stan Lee cameo, if one can be said to exist, is the one where he's played by Michael Peña in Ant-Man. That's the one that slightly makes me
smile. Is that because he doesn't speak?
Yeah.
You're a monster. You're an absolute monster.
The worst is the one in Guardians 2, which is gorgeous.
True believers. It's my Stanley impression.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Excelsior. I think it's pretty good.
I think it was Spider-Man 3 was the worst one.
What war crime did he perpetrate in that one?
He tries to give Spider-Man advice, and it's just a very awkward scene. He's actually become a better actor since then.
But the thing is, they're clearly not shot with the cast. Like, there's a bit when in Age of Ultron, you know, where he's one of the vets drinking at the bar thing, and he's next to Thor, but he's clearly not there with Chris Hemsworth, because there's these really obvious cuts when it goes to Stan Lee accepting a drink and then getting very drunk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like Stan Lee because he's extremely pedantic when it comes to hyphens. Like,
is he?
Yeah. And so I admire a fellow pedant.
Mm-hmm. I like Stan Lee because he created some of the greatest comic book characters of all time, and he's a lovely old man. Helen, why do you like Stan Lee?
I like Stan Lee, I think, for the same reason you do, because he's really good at his job.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoy his cameos. I think they're fun.
He has brought joy and happiness to untold millions. James, you have brought
the opposite.
It's hard to say what you've brought. You've brought us Sonic the Hedgehog echidna facts.
Don't diss echidnas. They're awesome.
Echidnas are awesome.
I take it back. You and Stanley are equal.
I mean, they're no pangolin, but they're pretty good. I thought there was a really funny thing on, you know, because how Ben made up the pangolin in a previous podcast. I have since discovered the joy of the pangolin, and someone pointed out...
He made up the pangolin?
Yeah, I insisted it was a made-up animal.
It's a real animal.
Yeah, so I've discovered. Yeah. But someone pointed out on Twitter that the way they hold themselves, they constantly look like some aging vizier about to break some bad news to their liege lord. Like, oh, Your Majesty, the prisoners, I'm terrible. They've escaped. You know, they have this kind of sort of rubbing their palms thing.
That person was Dana Schwartz.
Was it? Mm-hmm. It was a great tweet.
Well, I'm delighted that you're here. You've classed up the joint.
and in no way derailed anything.
Well, listen, I think... Even objectively, I think this podcast was derailed more than usual.
There have been no rails now for a while. This is like one of those kind of Keystone Cops things. So the train has come off the track. It's still moving, but like there's just disaster in its wake.
What were we talking about? We were talking about movie news. We were talking about Top Gun. What's your feeling on Top Gun 2?
I love a Top Gun. Very excited.
Top Gun: Maverick.
Top Gun Maverick.
I'm interested to know what kind of, you know, bland young people they're going to cast, because I'm worried they will be bland as the presumable incoming class to Miramar, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by that.
And I hope they won't be bland.
I want to know what the soundtrack is immediately. that's really the make or break for me. It's what is the soundtrack?
So it has to be, halfway between Highway to the Danger Zone?
Oh, it has to be. Playing with the boys, you know, I there's no logins on it. I'm not playing. That's
the Top Gun soundtrack was the first album I ever bought.
Wow. Mine was London Nights by the London Boys. Good but Lord. The less we say about that, the better.
Also, we have to figure out what sport will they be playing topless on the beach now?
Yes.
I mean, is it going to be Quidditch? You know, what do Quidditch. The young people play?
It'll
be them all sitting around shirtless playing Fortnite on the PS4. I think that's my understanding of what young people do today. So.
Why would they oil themselves up to do that? It just makes no sense.
Why do millennials do anything?
Yeah.
It needs some motorbike action. It frankly needs James Tolkien, who you may know best as Mr. Strickland from the Back to the Future films. He's still going, and he obviously in Top Gun played the extremely sweaty sort of superior officer who spent most of the time staring at the blips on a radar screen, getting furious.
Yeah.
He needs to come back.
He does.
That's a deal breaker for me.
I'm with you on that. And Tim Robbins as Merlin.
Yeah.
And they should bring back Anthony Edwards. Whatever happened to that guy, Goose? He was so good in that movie. I mean, I stopped watching halfway through, but I assume he survived.
Everything
right?
went well for him, and he and Meg Ryan lived happily ever after.
So Meg nice. Ryan, yes, I'd forgotten Meg Ryan was Mrs. Goose.
Yeah.
Yes, interesting.
Good cast, isn't it?
Yeah, really good.
Good cast. Joseph Kosinski, obviously Tony Scott, sadly no longer with us, so Joseph Kosinski's directing that. He's got a good eye. He's worked with the Cruiser before on Oblivion. So, fingers crossed for Top Gun Maverick.
Indeed.
But Tom Cruise, I think, has got confused about what film is him because his tweet just said he feels the need for speed. And obviously, that's an entirely different franchise. So, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, he doesn't. He just says he feels the need.
I mean, maybe he does. You think he needs the facilities? Is that?
I feel the need to be. Okay, so let's talk about two stories which are interlinked, and one is that Solo, a Star Wars story, underperformed, according to expectations at the box office around the world when it opened at the weekend. It made just over $100 million in the Memorial Day four-day weekend, and that had box office prognosticators panicking and running around and doing that thing going, the sky is falling. And it didn't do well at all worldwide as well. And some people are saying that this is the death of Star Wars. It's the end for Star Wars, which is obviously ridiculous. But I wanted to talk about that and see what you guys think. Mm. I think that this was bound to happen at some point. Now, not every single Star Wars film is going to gross $1 billion or $1.5 billion or $2 billion. And some of them will be like some of the smaller, the lesser grossing MCU movies. I think Marvel maybe don't expect Ant-Man and the Wasp to make $1 billion.
Hmm. Yeah.
Maybe the problem here was of perception, that maybe this was expected to make $1 billion and it ain't going to do that.
I think if that was the perception, I think that's fundamentally flawed. Mm-hmm. Just because this is a film that in the nicest possible way nobody asked for. And, you know, it just felt a bit more cynical, I think, than the new main trilogy, and even more than Rogue One, because I think Han Solo is just a bit first base. Well, I've been saying this for years as a Star Wars spin-off, and I don't think anybody needed to know that story. And the people who did would have been happy with a paperback book that they bought in the 80s. So I feel like this one in particular, there wasn't maybe the appetite for it, and of course the, you know, all the maybe the trailers and stuff hadn't done a good enough job of selling.
They didn't.
What was
no,
there?
You're quite right.
So I don't think it's a bad sign for Episode 9. I don't think it's anything to do with Episode 9. It's also only 5 months since our last Star Wars.
I think that's the biggest problem. Yeah. It's Star Wars fatigue. It feels like The Last Jedi was only just in cinemas, and I just don't understand why they didn't launch this in December. It makes no sense to me. It seems far too soon. And it is an incredibly inessential film, just in terms of exactly what you're saying. It's just, no one needs to see this. It's loads of fun, but it's not essential by any stretch.
I guess maybe there was enough kind of scuttlebutt, you know, stuff going around about the troubled production that if they pushed it back another 6 months, that would only intensify. I can only assume that's the reason.
Yeah. I think they should never have scheduled it for a summer release. They should do them a year apart, unless they're planning to ramp up to doing two Star Wars films a year, in which case, obviously, shuffle stuff around as much as you want. But if you're doing one a year, stick to 12 months between them.
And also, if you're doing more than one a year, then you have to be prepared for some to be massive underperformers relative to...
So not every... Because the price tag, the alleged price tag for Solo is hefty. And obviously that will factor in the reshoots, extensive reshoots after Ron Howard was brought on board to replace Lord and Miller. However, not every Star Wars film needs to be budgeted at a $150, $200, $250 million level.
Well, this is maybe also what we've learned from other successful franchises and so on, and in particular the MCU, which, let's face it, is the only successful interlinked franchise right now. But what the MCU does successfully is to make their films feel a little bit different each time. And one could argue absolutely that they should feel more different, but they have been different in terms of scale. You didn't spend as much on a Captain America movie, the first one, as you did on the second Iron Man, because you scaled appropriately to what you thought they were going to make. And I think if Star Wars is going to ramp up or stay at this level, you need to scale appropriately, and you need to have a sort of almost a Star Wars bottle episode. It is possible, and I think, to do in that universe. It should be possible. The other thing that I saw this week, and I apologize, I've forgotten who wrote it. I think it was on Den of Geeks. Very good piece where they discussed Solo's performance and said maybe the problem is that Star Wars as a general concept, aside from the main trilogy, isn't building towards anything. The MCU films, you know that there's a plan behind them. So even if you don't know who Doctor Strange is, you think, oh, well, I might want to see him before I see Avengers Infinity War in a couple of years. There's nothing like that for Solo. There's no sort of comparable.
It actually feels like it's going backwards. It's got backwards momentum by going backwards in time. And so you're like, well, I want to see what happens after.
And in a strange way, I mean, the way to do that would be to have some artifact turn up in Episode 9, a thing, and then have that turn up in a Knights of the Republic thing or a Solo or whatever, you know, in your next spin-off film. There are ways to connect them through time and space, but this certainly didn't really do that, apart from the characters.
Also, I think we've talked about this in the podcast. I enjoyed Solo a lot. I thought it was I had a blast and a blaster with it. We're going to do a spoiler special for this, and I got to really think about this a lot. But of the new Star Wars, I think this must be the most, for me, the most purely enjoyable of the four. It has flaws. It has big flaws. But I liked it a lot. I'm not saying it's great by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's a 3/4-star film. But I enjoyed the heck out of it. And I think there's a lot of things that it gets right. But we've talked about this in the podcast from the off, that there was no appetite for this movie.
No.
We want to see new Star Wars stories. We don't want to see old Star Wars stories.
That's the thing. It didn't feel to me like it expanded the galaxy in any kind of way. There was no really memorable new characters that you can't wait to see again, like BB-8. The aliens were just a big nothing, I thought. Like, you know, at least Return of the Jedi brought in a whole new sort of species of aliens, and they were a bit bold about it. Solo just felt like it was just, here's some stuff you like and a few forgettable other things. And I also thought they should have lent much more into the comedy, and that's the other thing Marvel do really well, is they have a very intense dark film, and then they have like an Ant-Man, which is very funny. It's like a pure comedy, or Ragnarok. Solo seemed to me that could have been Ragnarok, and they could have really lent into having it be funny, and instead it's tried to go for the earnestness
it
as well.
It feels a little bit like, had they kept with the original directors, it would have been exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, we don't know how much of a pure comedy, but definitely I imagine it was much more of a comedy, and I do think a really funny film with a young Han and Chewie running around getting into mishaps, I'd much rather have watched that.
Yeah, flying around, doing the Kessel Run to the Benny Hill music, it would have been amazing. Yeah, we'll talk about this in the spoiler special as well, but one of the reasons I wanted to bring up is it's underperformance, because it has underperformed, but the perceptions of that underperformance are interesting, I feel, because some people are saying that this is a backlash, a holdover from the ridiculous whining man-baby backlash against The Last Jedi. Mm. I don't think that's the case at all. I think there are some people who are boycotting Star Wars forever more. Get back in your basement, you losers. But for me, this doesn't affect this movie. I just think there's a general lack of appetite for this movie. And if they can go forward and make sure that not all the films are in the same budget range, then they should be okay, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about the news that broke last week before Solo came out, which is that James Mangold is going to direct, and Helen will love this. The next two stories are tailor-made for Helen. one is that James Mangold is going to direct, although that may change, the Boba Fett movie. That has been mooted for a long, long time. And again, we talked about this in the podcast about how there's no appetite for a Boba Fett movie. No. That character, would none of us have a particular connection to him. Thought he was pretty cool growing up, but let's face it, he's rubbish. He flies off, gets eaten by a space worm. And
Get him, Dad!
And just rubbish. But then James Mangold comes on board and I go,
I know. It really upsets me, and I said this on Twitter again, but I know
don't
I have
recycle
to...
tweets, well, Helen. Come out with your own opinions.
No, this is my tweet. I now have to struggle with the fact that I really respect and admire the work and general person of James Mangold and Danny Boyle, and I now have to just be okay with the fact that they're wasting their talents on Boba Fett and Bond, two of the holy trinity of basic boy things that boys like with Batman.
Batman,
Bond, and Boba Fett. It's like, oh, you like those? Oh,
imagine if they're all in the same film.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
Oh, wait a second.
So, no, stop it. But the thing about Boba Fett is genuinely, and I find this because I've asked a lot of people why they love him as much as they do, and a lot of people do love him, and it entirely seems to come down to the fact that he was a cool toy.
On screen, he's
rubbish.
He's got well-designed armor. He has a good aesthetic. That is the only positive of that character, because he has no character.
And they will all tell me, oh, he stands up to Darth Vader. He's the only person who stands up to Darth Vader. I don't care.
Oh,
no, he doesn't. He
that.
Just That's, gives him some
he
rip.
He doesn't
who
stand
cares?
Up to
He's not good to me, dude.
And then he falls in a pit and dies, and I don't care about the extended universe anymore where he crawls out and has more adventures, because it's not canon. I don't have to. But I probably do now.
Yeah.
Anyway, if they cast Taika Waititi, then I'm on board.
You've been very potty mouthed today, Helen. Yeah. Can I just say that it has offended me?
I apologise, Chris.
Thanks, Helen.
Yeah, so Fett is the thing. So this was Josh Trank's film originally, wasn't it? It's the one where, if rumour is to be believed, they were going to announce at Celebration, the year that I was there, in fact, that Josh Trank was going to be doing Fett, and that would be... that we're going to announce that instead of Rogue One.
Yeah.
And then he
tranked his own career.
He did indeed. Yeah. He tranked it, and that was the end of that. So I wondered whether they would get back to this, and sadly they
could
have.
Could this be good, though? Could this be Free Fire or Reservoir Dogs in space, but with bounty hunters?
Look, Mangold's really good. We like him.
Yeah. But the problem is this. It has to be set before Return of the Jedi, when he gets eaten.
It could happen in the Sarlacc.
And it has to be played by Tamara Morrison. Those are the two things that have to be true.
He doesn't, although Tamara Morrison is very excited about this news this week. But no, he doesn't.
He's a clone!
They'll find a way. They'll recast, they'll retcon, they'll do something. You know, and I don't think he's going to be played by Tamara Morrison.
Will they do a dread and...
keep his mask on the
not
whole
have time.
On. Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Perhaps. Who knows?
I hope they do.
But what's interesting about this is that this is exactly the sort of low-budget thing that they need to do. They can do this at $20 million, $25 million, $30 million, whatever it is. But this does not have to be $250
Logan
million.
Logan did not cost that much more than that, actually.
It did not, no.
What if it's even more low-scale? What if it's like a knockabout comedy? It's One Night at Jabba's, and it's a knockabout comedy, and it's him and Dengar pulling pranks on each other at Jabba's palace.
See, Dengar, that's the movie they should be doing.
Dengar the movie. I'm all for this. I pitched this last week.
But my feeling is, and we'll get into this in the spoiler special a bit more, but my feeling is that they are building towards something with these spin-offs. They are building towards...
is it called Return of the Jedi?
It's a nice goal to have, right? Yeah. But we're going to have Boba Fett.
Yeah.
We've got a Han.
Yeah.
Origin story, which, you know, if they make a sequel to that, and that ain't a given anymore. But there's talk of a Lando spin-off. There's talk of Kenobi, and Kenobi would be presumably on Tatooine, which is where a certain character may be going at the end of a certain spin-off. I don't want to say too much in case people can crack this code, but a certain roguish smuggler may be heading to Tatooine to meet up with a certain sluggish gangster.
A certain walking carpet maybe with him. Yeah.
Can be no crossover between those characters.
Why?
Because they meet for the first time in Star Wars, and I will have to burn the world down if they mess with that.
Who meets for the first time in Star Wars?
Han and Ben.
No, but Han and Ben, yes, but Boba Fett and Ben can meet.
Well, I mean,
Lando and Ben can meet. All these characters can come in. So you don't have a Solo sequel, but you do have Alden Ehrenreich and, you know, not Peter Mayhew, turn up in the Lando movie or the Kenobi movie in the background, and not, you know, you can make it work. That's what I think they're doing. Anyway, Danny Boyle's doing Bond 25. Hooray!
Hooray! Helen is already queuing.
Yeah.
Helen has Bagsied the set visit.
Bagsied.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's going to be shooting up in Blackpool. Excited about that?
Honestly, that's about as far as I'm willing to go for Bond, so that's fine. I kid, but I mean, if they want to send me to the Bahamas to cover it, then I will just have to go. But
the hardships, this is a life we lead, the life we chose.
And there is only one guarantee.
None of us will
go to the Bahamas. Yeah. It won't happen.
So there you go. We've talked about this in the podcast for a while, that Danny Boyle has been linked with Bond 25. It was officially confirmed last week. So we're all very excited about it.
And we didn't go with the headline that I suggested, Boyle's in the bag. So, you know, I think that was an open goal that we missed.
That's brilliant. That's really good. You've redeemed yourself. Two more things to talk about very quickly. One is the news that Andrew Lincoln seems set to leave The Walking Dead in season 9 of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So Rick Grimes.
I mean, is there anything much more left for him to do?
Frankly, I'm surprised he hasn't done it earlier.
Yeah.
Because there's been all these stories that he put his movie career on hold. He won't take movie jobs, apparently, while he's filming The Walking Dead, even when they're on hiatus. So Norman Reedus is like doing his show and making movies. The left, right and center, Lauren Cohen's doing the same. But Andrew Lincoln says no. So maybe he wants to get his movie career back on track or on track. And
he might just be bored. He's been doing it a long time. He possibly is bored of Atlanta, like being out there all the time.
How can you be bored with Atlanta? It's got the world of Coca-Cola. It's where Anchorman 2 was shot. How could you possibly be bored with that?
I see what you're saying.
I was in a really big Target there when I was there as well. Like, really good selection of Oreos. I mean, it's a wonderful place.
Well, okay. But let's assume that he's not into Oreos and there's a possibility that
there are also good barbecue restaurants.
Okay.
Absolute weirdo.
So strange.
You've come in here and you've upset everybody. Apologise.
Yeah. I mean, apart from Nick, who isn't paying attention.
Apart from Nick,
who's
playing on his phone.
I'm still a bit upset by it.
No, but, you know, he won't take on movies, whereas Lenny James has gone straight from doing a full season of The Walking Dead to doing a full season of Fear the Walking Dead. So he is up to his arse in zombies. A very busy man.
It's a bad place to be.
Yeah.
I'd be interested. I would like it if they didn't kill him off. I would like it if they just let Rick Grimes walk off at the sunset and then kill him off screen. But not, I don't need to see
Zombie Rick.
Frankly, not that I'm watching it, but if I were to watch it, I don't want to see Rick Grimes eaten alive by a pack of zombies. Call me old-fashioned.
I'm the only person still watching this show.
I checked out, I think, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
Negan, it's
the grind of this show that there is no end. How do they end this thing? It just carries on until they get bored and stop it, or people stop watching it. Enough people.
It's really bleak.
But I just find it just there's no possible happy ending. There's no possible resolution to any of it.
But he's talking about the podcast, The Walking Dead.
The thing with The Walking Dead is
a podding dead.
The one thing it will always have going for it is it's better than Fear the Walking Dead. So, you know,
well, I've heard otherwise actually.
Well, Fear the Walking Dead has had an injection of new life in the form of Lenny James and Maggie Grace. So that has mixed things up a little bit. But it's been the lesser show.
Just feels like it goes on and on and on and just to no end.
Well, that's
life.
That's the zombie condition for you, Nick.
Yeah. It's
very last thing is this news broke as we were recording the podcast that The Crow, Corin Hardy's The Crow with Jason Momoa, which seems cursed, endlessly cursed, appears to be off again. On off, on off, on off,
boom,
off again. Yeah. Which is very, very sad.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. No crow.
That's not crow about that. Very, very sad news indeed. And we hope that it comes back in the future.
Because Corin has been trying to get this off the ground for a long, long time, right? That's a shame.
Yeah. I think, again, we've been talking about this on the podcast for probably 5 years.
I would say 5 years.
Well, in fact, he was on our live show in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Film Festival. That was, 3-4 years ago? And he even then he was showing like little crow things and going, this is, you know, established my credentials. I was a big crow fan when I was 17. Here I am dressed as a crow. And, you know, now look, anyway, well, fingers crossed it all comes back together again. Okay, now time for a word from our sponsors. As you know, this week's podcast is sponsored by Sky Cinema, which gives you unlimited access to the best movies at home whenever and wherever you want in the best possible way. I have been a Sky Cinema subscriber for many years now. I love the choice they offer. They have over 1,000 quality movies on demand, ready for me to enjoy whenever I want. First up is American Made, in which Tom Cruise does his thing as Barry Seal, an airline pilot turned drug smuggler and gunrunner for the CIA and Pablo Escobar's cartel down in Colombia. This is a biopic. Barry Seal was a real guy. This is a true story, although I think director Doug Liman does take some liberties with Seal's story, but he fashions a really fun ride for the most part as Barry Seal, who is played by Cruise at his swaggering, smiling best, tries his best to run rings around his handlers at the CIA and Pablo Escobar, while also trying to keep his wife happy at home. It's a lot of fun, very, very sippy movie. It takes a lot from the Goodfellas playbook of biopics, and it's great to see Liman and Cruise, who, of course, linked up to such great effect on Edge of Tomorrow, knocking it out of the park once again. And there is a serious undertow to this side as well. So there you go. American Made, that is my main recommendation this week. And if you're in the mood for something a little funnier, then why not check out in the animation section of Sky Cinema the Lego Batman movie, which sees Will Arnett foisting the Caped Crusader once again to fine anarchic form. And this is very much a spin-off from the Lego movie. So again, it has that wild, wacky tone. Lots of great side jokes. So many gags. Just bombards you with jokes. And Will Arnett, for my money, is up there with the likes of Michael Keaton and Christian Bale and George Clooney as the best big screen Batman. It's a lot of fun, a lot of fun, the Lego Batman movie. So there you go. American Made, Lego Batman movie. And that is it for my recommendations for Sky Cinema this week. Join me next week for more Sky Cinema related fun. Time now for this week's guest. He is, I say this with everybody, but he is one of our favourite actors. He started out on the small screen shooting wry glances to camera relentlessly as Tim in the British version of The Office. And since then, he has forged a fantastic career on both the big screen and the small screen. You'll know him, of course, as Dr. John Watson in Sherlock, Ever K. Ross in Captain America Civil War and Black Panther, and Bilbo Baggins in those Hobbit movies that Nick likes so much. He is, of course, Martin Freeman, and he can be seen this week walking through the outback, trying desperately to stop being eaten by zombies in the fantastic Australian horror film Cargo, which is now available on Netflix. Our John Nugent went along to speak to him last week in London, and I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure they had a lot of fun. And you know what? You will too. Enjoy.
We're thrilled to welcome to the Empire Podcast Martin Freeman. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. So we're here to talk about Cargo. Mm-hmm. Which is not your first zombie movie, if I'm right in saying.
Technically, I did a day on Shaun of the Dead as a sort of visual joke to be Simon's equivalent in the other group. But yeah, it's my first sustained time with some zombies, yeah.
This is quite different to Shaun of the Dead, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. Yes.
I mean, would you say this even fits in the zombie genre?
I mean, such? I guess it does, you know, and I think, as I've said publicly, and now it's taken on its own life, oh, you know, Martin doesn't like, because, you know, it's a genre he dislikes. I don't even know that I dislike it. It's just not something that I had my eye on. And when I read the script of Cargo, the zombie aspect of it wasn't the first thing that appealed to me. Mm-hmm. What really appealed to me was the, you know, survival of a family and the, you know, the father's desire to get his daughter to safety. That obviously resonated with me more than anything else, because that's real, and zombies aren't quite real. Sorry, folks, but I like the sort of level that they're at in Cargo. Mm. They're kind of part of the tapestry of the film, but they're not sort of front and centre. Mm. But the fear of them kind of is.
And it's also I guess you could call it a survival movie, but it's a survival movie where your child is the survival at key, I suppose, isn't it?
Yes, because, I suppose we can say now, because I'm not necessarily going to make it, but I've got to make sure that she does.
Yes.
And also, and we get the help of the character Tumi, who's an 11-year-old girl who helps us with that, and we help each other to sort of find home. Really.
Yeah, yeah. And this is based on a short film, isn't it?
Yeah.
From YouTube. Were you aware of that film?
I was. Yeah. I mean, well, I was sent it. Excuse me. I was sent it at the same time I was sent the script, and Ben Howling and Yolanda Ramke made this short several years ago. And it was intriguing as a short. I liked it, but also the screenplay, the feature screenplay, padded it all out, not padded it out, but it kind of fleshed it out, rather, to make sense of a whole story. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I thought the short was really good in that you're sort of left. That's the kind of culmination of the film, in a way, of the screenplay. Mm. So you are left kind of thinking, well, how the hell did they get here? You know, just that image of, you know, a sort of empathetic zombie. A zombie that is still human in a way, you know.
Yeah. And it's set in Australia, of course. Mm-hmm. And that country has a bit of a post-apocalyptic tradition in movies. Mm. Does it help being on location in a country like that, with you're sort of in the wilderness and you don't see anyone for
Well, I'd certainly,
miles.
Yeah, I'd never been in the outback before.
Yeah.
And so I'd never filmed anywhere quite like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it does. Environment always impacts what you do and what you write, and you know how we think. And so, yeah, that was helpful. And for me, as an English person, it was just really lovely to be in an environment where you know, oh, there's emus and there's dingoes and there's you know, kangaroos sort of hopping by. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Sunshine.
Sunshine. Yeah. That's quite a bonus. Yeah. Yeah. Always.
But I mean, what was the shoot like? Because without wanting to give too much away, you know, there's a scene at one point where you have your head literally in the sand, you know. Is it quite an intense shoot?
Yes, it was. It was intense.
Full on?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, as you will be aware, smaller budget things tend to be intense because you can't sit around.
Yeah.
Doing anything but getting to work, you know. So it was about, was it a 5-week shoot maybe? And I was there for not very long.
Yeah.
Those things are always intense. Yeah. But you add the outback to that, and you add sort of mosquitoes the size of golf balls to that, and flies and dust and heat and all of that. You know, and again, for the Aussies, that was less of a problem because they were more used to that stuff. But I wasn't used to that. You know, it was, I'm not trying to paint it as like it was my own private hell or anything. But yeah, it was not comfortable. Yeah, it was not the most comfortable shoot I've ever done. No.
We were talking about Australia. I'd love to talk a little bit about New Zealand because obviously this is a place that you've spent a lot of time in. I went on holiday there this month, actually.
Did you?
Completely fell in love with
just
the place.
Just holiday or was it working?
Just well, I had a wedding to I've got family there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a country you fall in love with instantly.
Nice, isn't it? Yeah, it's really good.
I was just wanted to know what your favourite place in New Zealand was. Do you have any, like, is there somewhere that's particularly special to you?
Well, I mean, we toured around a bit on The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And so many places in the South Island were beautiful and mind-blowing as far as just sort of looking like they'd just been made in a fantastic factory or something. like, oh, and this mountain has just been built for you to come and use for this film.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't spend any time anywhere as long as I did in Wellington. You know, we were based in Wellington. I didn't get that much time off when I was there. I mean, not time where I could go away to other places anyway. That was the place that I was most familiar with, and I liked it. I was there for longer than I've ever been anywhere else apart from London.
Right.
So it kind of did, you know, New Zealand does feel a little bit like a second home.
Yeah, Wellington's got a lovely feel to it.
It has. It's small, but still, you know, it's a bit groovy and a bit busy.
It's got an alternative edge to it.
Yeah, it has,
And I really enjoyed Hobbiton as well, which, you know, probably didn't have a gift shop when you were there, but it was starting.
Yeah, yeah. I think all that was getting going.
Yeah.
But it's much more up and running now, I think, the Hobbiton experience.
Yeah.
I've been sent pictures by friends who are, you know, by Bilbo's door and stuff like that. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it's pretty magical.
And the fact that it is magical, I think, kind of makes sense that it's in New Zealand, even though obviously it wasn't written about New Zealand. It wasn't destined to happen in New Zealand. But they're a very optimistic nation, actually. Because they're new. They're, you know, compared to us, they're very young.
Yeah.
And they're still optimists. You know what I mean? Whereas I guess we probably stopped being that in about 1900, I suppose. You know what I mean? Culturally,
right.
They are still on the up.
Yeah.
They think things are possible. And it's a lovely... And so there is a kind of magic there. Because even in a country relatively... It's a small country. There are still places, I think, you know, from what I understand, that, you know, when they're scouting locations, there's still places where people go, wow, no one's ever seen this bit before, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it very much.
Yeah. I would love to just talk briefly about Marvel, if you don't mind. Kind of feel obliged to you as Empire. It's been, I think, 4 months since Black Panther.
Yes.
And it's just kind of exploded. It was a kind of a phenomenon. Now the dust has sort of settled a bit. How do you feel about that reaction?
I mean, I think the extent of it took us by surprise, definitely. Yeah. We felt we were making a good... an exciting film while we were doing it. We knew there was an audience for it, and we knew that it was ready to be received by some people with open arms, but we also knew we had to make a good film. Because however much people are looking forward to something or however much anticipation there is, if you deliver something and it's subpar, you know, they're not stupid, they're not going to fall for it. And I think we, / Ryan Coogler, / Marvel, did a fantastic job with it, you know? The marketing was smart as well.
Yeah.
Soundtrack was great. It was timely.
Yeah.
But apart from all of that, it was an exciting, sort of thrilling film, you know, with good heroes and good baddies. And there was slightly more, you know, I like Marvel films because they are a bit more layered, actually, a lot of the time. But this, you know, I think this was even more so.
Yeah, very much.
The baddies weren't quite so... They weren't just bad. I mean, Andy Serkis is a great baddie. But Eric Killmonger is a baddie who, everything he says, you go, oh, he's kind of got a point there.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad he didn't win, you know, because I don't want someone like him ruling a major country. But yeah, nothing he said was not true.
Have you seen Infinity War yet?
No, I have. No, not yet.
You haven't?
No, not yet. No, man.
Wow. Okay. So I can't spoil it for you at the end then.
Yeah, go on then.
Well, I was just going to ask because, you know, many people die in that film without wanting to go into specifics.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to know if Everett Ross is still alive.
The plan is, yeah. I think all the hope is, that, as far as I know, he is, yeah.
Yeah. So you think he survived Thanos' wrath?
That's, as far as I understand it, and again... I guess it's not written in blood, but I think I'm preparing to do another one.
Yeah.
Whether Marvel knows that or not, I'm just going to demand to Kevin Feige and go, look, well, I'm here.
Okay.
He'll say, but you're dead. I say, I don't care.
So it could just be you.
Yeah, I'm doing a milk round. Everett Ross has moved on. He's not in the government anymore. He's just a travelling knife grinder.
Everett Ross, Milkman.
Milkman.
That's the movie I want to see.
Going very slowly in a milk float towards certain death.
Well, we very much look forward to that. Martin Freeman, thank you so much for
your
time. Thank you.
Time now for this week's reviews. Let's start with Cargo, actually, which is on Netflix as of Friday, I believe. This is, for me, a really surprising, really interesting horror film. Shares a little bit in common with A Quiet Place in that it is a post-apocalyptic thing. Zombies have taken over the world. Martin Freeman, who is an expat living in Australia, and his wife and their young baby daughter are trying desperately to stay alive some weeks after the attack has happened. They're on a riverboat heading down the river in Australia, trying to stay away from slow-moving Romero-style zombies.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of this movie is once you get bitten, you have 48 hours, and you have a little Fitbit type thing that tells you how long you have before you turn into a zombie. It's not giving away too much, I think, to say that someone gets bitten very early in this film and knows that they're about to turn into a zombie, and then spends the rest of the movie trying desperately in the vastness of the Australian outback to find somebody to take care of the people that they're going to leave behind. So it's a really interesting film. It's an elegiac movie. It's an emotional film. It's not concerned with jump scares at all. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It's anchored by a really, really great performance by Martin Freeman. It's a really interesting combination that comes together very, very nicely and will stay with you long after the end credits roll. So Cargo, 4 stars. I gave it 4 stars for Cargo. Good stuff indeed. Helen, you were going to talk about François Ozon's new movie, Le Monde Double.
I was. Double. C'est ça, mon Dieu.
I can't. Double.
Yes, so this is the story about Chloe, who's played by Marine Vash. She was a model. She is now an art gallery person who works in an art gallery. And she's trying to figure out her problems by going to a psychotherapist whose name is Paul. He's played by your favourite, Chris, Jeremy Renier. Très bien. However, their professional relationship is not entirely professional. Because this is, after all, a French film, and that means where an American film might have explosions, the French have
explosions of a different kind.
That's right.
Shall we say?
Mm-hmm. So this it begins gynecologically, let's say, and doesn't really stop that. There is, again, as you would expect, lots of kind of Freudian analysis, imagery, sort of just a mess of psychosexual. Well, I mean, piffle is the word that our reviewer, Alex Godfrey, has used.
That's so weird, Mum. Helen. Helen, Mum.
No.
Oh,
that's wrong. That's really upsetting. But it is, it's a kind of a doppelganger story in a way as well. I think he goes a little bit spoilery in the review, so I'm trying to tread around some stuff that he said.
You don't mention the fallen Madonna with the big boobies. That was an unexpected third act.
Listen very carefully. I will say this only once, okay? Ozon is basically, if you like his films, I think you might still like it, but it's not maybe his best stuff. It very much divided the critics ever since it premiered, I think it's fair to say. Godfrey. Alex has gone slightly on the downside of the line.
You'd be more on the upside.
I was a little bit more upset, but not. I can absolutely see everything he's saying here, to be honest, and I find it very hard to argue. But he's called it a disappointingly superficial romp, and he is kind of right. I just quite like that it's quite stylish, but you know, it's not unfair. So anyway, 2 stars for Le Monde Double.
So there you go, and that is it for this week's Emperor Podcast. Join us next week for more film related fun. We'll be joined by Andy Serkis.
Ooh.
How exciting.
Wait, hang on. So we've just had Martin Freeman and now we're going to have Andy Serkis.
Yeah, we've had Bilbo.
I
know, we've had Bilbo. We've had Gollum. Who's next, Helen? Thorin Oakenshield?
Aragorn.
I mean, that'd be mad, wouldn't it? If Richard Armitage was a guest on the podcast after this one, that'd be mad,
wouldn't
it?
That would be mad.
Well, we'll see what happens. Until that auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from the frankly disinterested Nick Desemlian. It's goodbye from the agent of chaos that is James Dyer.
Excelsior!
He's fully on board with Stan Lee now. He loves it.
I do. Love Stan. Oh, I love him.
Goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to have a drink with Moira. Hey, Moira, how do you fancy having a drink with me?
I'm sorry, Chris. I am washing my hair.
Oh. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week. Bye.